This is ridiculous. Can you follow me over here for a second? I'm just gonna jump off stage. This is only in Seattle, where someone is wearing no shoes. No shoes or socks. What? Who are you people? What is wrong with you? I would expect that behavior from this guy. But not you, sir. Not you. What is this? Where do you think you are? Seattle. So I've been going recently to a women's exercise class. I've given up on having a traditional male physique, and so now I'm going for strong, independent woman. And it's going pretty well. You know, I'm not as good in the class as you might think. Sometimes I'll kind of skip whole sections of the more difficult exercises when the instructor isn't looking, but then when she looks over, I always have to strike a pose as though I've been doing what everybody else has been doing. It reminds me of the Olympics. You know how in the gymnastics, how they'll have those, the girls will do those crazy flips and twirls, and every once in a while, and I'm not saying I root for this to happen, but sometimes they'll fall, and it's ugly, because they're rolling around like, I'm in a lot of trouble. Like, I don't even know how I got here. But at the end of that, no matter what, and I totally fall for it. I'm like, that can't possibly be the same loser from moments ago. I mean, that's a completely different person. This person has much better posture, for starters. I really wanted Jenny to come out with me and Andy that night in St. Louis, because we're going out to one of these famous Irish pubs where no one can hear anyone speak, and so I thought that might work to my advantage. I don't know. And I didn't have the nerve to ask her myself, and so I convinced Andy to ask her for us, and I don't know if that was the best idea, because we're in the car heading to the pub, and Jenny says, oh, I left my ID at the hotel, and I was like, oh, we can just swing back and get it, and she was like, no, it'll be fine, and I was like, no, it won't be fine, because it's St. Patrick's Day, and there's bouncers, and she goes, no, it'll be okay, and I was like, no, it won't be okay, and then we get to the pub and it was fine. Like, the bouncers just kind of waved her through, which has not been my experience with bouncers. For me, bouncers are like prison guards. And for Jenny, they're like birthday clowns. Like, you know, what can I do to make your day better? You know, and that's... We're at the pub and it had taken so much convincing for Andy to get Jenny to come out that by the time she came out, she thought she was on a date with him. And yeah, that wasn't the idea. And so I said I had to convince him to fall away as the night went on, like the red rockets and the space shuttle. And eventually, she realized she was on a date with me. And she was not happy about that. But she warmed to me as the night went on because she was drinking. And like, you know, by the end of the night, we were laughing and having a good time. And I caught a break, which is we shared a ride back to our hotel with one of their friends. And she and I were stuffed in this little back seat together. It was really quiet, so I could hear her soft voice. And she told me she had just come off a long, difficult breakup, and I told her about my breakup. And for a moment there in the back seat, it felt like we were holding up two halves of a broken paper heart. And we get back to the hotel, and I offer to walk her to her room, and she says, sure. And we get to her door, and I didn't want this night to end, and so I build up the courage to lean in to kiss her. And she says, oh, no, thank you. Which I thought was polite. But disappointing. I mean, there's something about a rejected kiss that is the most personal type of rejection, because you're really putting yourself out there. You're just like, I think we should connect mouths, you know? And the other person's like, I do not think we should connect mouths. And those are two very different mouth agendas, you know? And then you just feel so stupid. You're like, I never should have suggested we connect mouths, you know? And this is a sore subject for me. I have sort of a long history of failed kisses. Like, I remember growing up, like, when people started making out. Like, in my town in Massachusetts, it was in seventh grade. And I remember it like it was yesterday, because I was shocked. I was like, people we know? making out with other people we know? But how? You know, it seemed like an alien ritual where these two aliens just attach orifices all of a sudden. I was like, I am not doing that. And collectively, all the girls in my class were like, that is fine. You are not on the list. You're not exactly a first-round draft pick for our new activity. And I was like, perfect. Seems so gross to me. And it still does, kind of. Like, sometimes you hear these homophobic arguments from these guys who are like, I don't like when I see two dudes making out in the street. And I feel that way about anyone. Like, making out is just sloppy. It's like watching a dog eat spaghetti. Yeah. That's how I make out. Is that right? Does anybody know if that's right? Okay, good. So, in seventh grade, I was like, I'm not gonna make out with anybody. And that was fine for a while, but increasingly it kind of divided the class into two distinct parts. There was like the make-out club and the non-make-out club, and these were informal organizations, of course. I mean, that would be sad if that were school sanctioned. Like, I call this meeting of the non-make-out club to order. First order of business, Nintendo. Second order of business, why doesn't anyone like us? Meeting adjourned. I don't know, it's a sad group and we were losing good guys by the day. And I feared that soon I would be the lone member of the non-makeout club. So I was like, I gotta try to get into the makeout club, but it was a very intangible goal. I didn't really talk to a lot of girls. I mean, there was one girl who sat in front of me in class named Lisa Bizzetti, who I had a huge crush on, but she was way out of my league. Like, she had many suitors. She had, the rest of the show is in old English. She doth had many suitors. She had many, you know, admirers, and there were three of us, really, and I was in third place in all the trade publications, but I had one advantage over these other guys, which is she had to talk to me on the phone every night about homework, thanks to alphabetical order, Bizzetti. Bigly. And one time I said something on the phone that made her laugh, and I was like, oh, this is great. Like, I gotta do that more. And one time we were on the phone, and she was laughing so hard, and I remember so well, because she goes, Mike, you gotta stop. I'm gonna pee myself. And I was like, wow. This was the closest I'd ever come to a vagina. So I spent the next 15 years trying to get Lisa Bizzetti to pee. And that's how I ended up here. Yeah. That's how we all ended up here, in a sense. So, we're out to dinner and she says to me, she goes, everyone hates me at work. And I said, why would they hate you? I love you. She goes, you love me? I go, I mean, you seem cool. I pulled it back. I didn't want to show all my cards. Just about 9 of them. One of the other things that she said of note on this date is she said, you know, sometimes I'll date two people at once and that way I'm never let down by either person. I said, that seems like a really smart plan. Like, I'd like to do that as well. And she said, I'm still kind of seeing my ex-boyfriend, John, and you can see other people too, but you have to tell me if you're seeing them. And I was like, all right, sounds like a plan. Got it. Break. I gotta go find some more people, you know? And so, a few nights later, I'm in another city and I do a show. And after the show, I went out to a bar and I ended up making out with this random girl. And then a few nights later, I'm out to dinner with Jenny and she says, how was your trip? And I said, it was great. I did some shows. And then one night, I ended up making out with this random girl. And that didn't go over very well in the conversation. I could sense that something was wrong. And I was like, but I'm right about that, right? Like, I'm supposed to tell you if that happens, right? And she says, yeah, but it doesn't mean that I won't lose interest in you. And I said, that's a whole new clause. That's a twist. What is this, a romantic comedy version of The Usual Suspects? I said, are you still seeing John? And she said, sometimes. I said, well, don't you see the contradiction in that? And she says, yes. And it gets very quiet because we were falling in love. 3 weeks into my relationship with Jenny, I built up the courage to ask her to go on a trip to Bermuda. I wanted to show her how much more money I could put on my credit card. And since I didn't have a lot left, we went to Bermuda because it was the off season. You can get these great deals online because, as it turns out, when it's winter in New York, it is also winter in Bermuda. And Jenny and I meet up at the airport. And she's late, which is a big pet peeve of mine. I fancy myself as a professional traveler. I'm always 2 hours early. I have my pocket for my ticket and my passport, and I have laceless moccasins. I never tell jokes about bombs, and Jenny's late. And then we get to security, and I'm not making this up. She doesn't have a license or a passport. And I said, what do you mean? I go, how do you travel? And she goes, well, usually they let me on the plane with my credit card and my work ID. I don't like to dwell on the differences between men and women, but I just can't imagine a scenario where a man would go to the airport with no license and no passport and they would let him on a plane. But women get a pass on things like this that I find completely bewildering. I mean, if I were in charge of Al-Qaeda, for example, what I would do is I would recruit attractive women because they're just not stopped under any circumstances, although it would be difficult to recruit them because all they have to offer are the 72 virgins. And, you know, the women wouldn't want that unless they're lesbians, although there's an idea. You know, Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda could recruit hot lesbians, although... Then they'd have to guarantee that the 72 virgins are also lesbians. I mean, what are the odds, you know? All 72 virgins are also lesbians, unless you think of sexuality as like a blank slate concept where the first person you have sex with dictates your sexual identity. Like, the 72 virgins are like, I didn't even know I was a lesbian until I had sex with that hot lesbian terrorist. And now that's all I'm into. I used to be into these Afghani guys who were so crazy, they'd die in a fiery plane crash to have sex with me and 71 of my friends. But now I don't see Khalid in the same way anymore. The point is, we went to Bermuda and we're on the flight. On the flight, and the flight attendant comes over and she puts champagne glasses down in front of us and she says, congratulations on your honeymoon. And we said, oh, no thanks, we're not on our honeymoon. And she walks away and Jenny says, that's so funny, I don't think I'll ever go on a honeymoon. And I said, oh, really? And she goes, yeah, I don't think I'd ever want to get married in my life. And I said, oh, really? I go, me too. I said, is that based on a principle or did you have a bad relationship? Like, what was your first boyfriend like? And she told me about her first boyfriend, Brian. They were the same bus stop when they were 16 and they would make out on the bus. And they were together for 6 years and their relationship got deeper and they would talk about how they were gonna get married and spend the rest of their lives together. And I said, then what? And she said, he died. He had leukemia. And I said, well, do you ever talk about this with anyone? And she says, no, I don't really like to talk about it. But these were the kinds of conversations we started having on this trip where Jenny was opening up to me and I was opening up to her. And every night we'd be up till 2 or 3 in the morning and we were so happy. At one point I was like, well, we should do this again. We should go on another trip and you could get a license or a passport. And Jenny said, that sounds great, but I don't think I get a license or a passport because they don't make me get one. And I was like, yeah, but it's the law, you know. And Jenny says, yeah, I don't think I'll get one because they don't make me get one. You know, that's how I feel. That's how Jenny argues things. Sometimes she'll just say, that's how I feel. And I'll say, that's not an argument. Like, we're not even in an argument right now because you don't have an argument. Her name was Amanda, and she was, like, adorable and funny. What was really exciting for me is that she was, like, a delinquent. Like, I was, like, this play-by-the-rules school citizen, and she had been expelled from her previous school for dealing acid, which I thought was a really strong quality. Like, at one point, she was like, it was totally messed up because it wasn't even me. It was this other girl, and I was framed. And I was just like, awesome. Like, no one would ever frame me for anything. I thought it was like an opposites attract situation. She wanted to know what it was like to hang out with someone in student government who writes for the newspaper. And I wanted to know what it was like to be cool. At one point, I was like, do you want to write an article for the newspaper? She goes, I don't want to write an article. I want to do things people write articles about. I was like, good answer. I find that when you fall in love, you tend to overlook certain red flags. One of them was that she would say really mean stuff to me, but then she would pull it back. She'd be like, no one likes you at all. Only kidding. Or like, you're like a nerd, but you're not even smart. Just joking. Can't choose who you love. Second red flag with Amanda was that she was a liar. And I don't mean that in the offensive way. Like, lying was kind of like it's like a sport at the school I was at. I transferred from the all-boys school to this co-ed school. There was this one guy in my class named Keith Robbins who was a legendary liar. You'd know when he was lying because he would lick his finger like a bookie and he would dart his eyes from side to side and he'd go, yeah, yeah, nice, nice, you know, and he wasn't even handling money. Like, I don't even know what this is about. And then he would lie about things that were sort of insignificant. He'd be like, yeah, my uncle's Tony Robbins, motivational speaker. Yeah, nice, you know. And we found out that that wasn't even true, but even if that were true, that wouldn't be impressive to a bunch of high school students. But I think that's the Jedi level of lying, is you lie about little stuff and no one notices when you're lying about big stuff. It's like banking. The final red flag with Amanda was that she told me not to tell anyone that she was my girlfriend. I know. I'm in the future also. I think we can all see now. We're so smart, and Mike's so dumb, and now I can also see in retrospect that's a much bigger red flag than I perceived it to be at the time, but I was so excited she was even with me at all, and she said she had another boyfriend at home, but they were in the process of breaking up, but it was a bad time because his parents were sick, and so I tried to be understanding of that, and I went along with it for a few months until she invited me to meet her parents, and I thought, well, this is the affirmation that I need. I'm going to be crowned as the main boyfriend. And I drive my mom's station wagon to Amanda's parents' house, and I walk in the front door, and there's Amanda, and there's her parents, and it's going well. And a few hours go by, and this other guy comes over to the house, and his name is Scott. And I'm assuming he's like a family friend or a relative. And slowly I'm noticing similarities between Scott and things that Amanda has said about her other boyfriend. They're both in their first year in college, and they're competitive wrestlers, and it's dawning on me that I'm hanging out with my girlfriend's boyfriend. It's going pretty well. I mean, he seemed like a nice guy. I could totally see what she saw in him. There was some consolation that when he would go in the other room to the kitchen or the bathroom, she would hold on to my hand and she would say, I wish it were just you and me here. And I remember thinking, you could make that happen. The way she said it was as though she weren't involved in the decision process. Like, I'd love to, but the boys in corporate. Well, the day took an even stranger turn when Scott suggested that we go hang out at his house. And I met his parents. It is indescribable meeting your girlfriend's boyfriend's parents for the first time. Part of you is angry for obvious reasons, but then part of you still wants to make a good impression. Yeah. Maybe if this goes well, she'll see that I'm good with adults in general. As a side note, his parents seemed in perfect health. At one point, his dad even said to me, how do you know Amanda? And I said, we're just friends from school. And I was so ashamed, and I felt so dumb, and I drove home, and I remember thinking, I am never gonna let this happen to me again. So, 10 months into my relationship with Jenny, she invites me to meet her parents. And this is a tricky time. At this point, our relationship was intense but casual, which is a dangerous relationship cocktail. And it was a hard thing to organize because I was away probably 5 days out of the week. And so we found a Sunday where I was coming back from a 5-day stint in Texas, which was awful because it was in Texas. And I had, that's not to say I dislike Texas entirely. It's such a large thing to dislike. And, but that week, it felt like Texas just disliked me, and I just kind of disliked Texas back to the point where I developed a small drinking problem, which is very popular in Texas. So about 5 years ago, pretty much everyone who I know started to get married, and that was strange for me because I don't really believe in the idea of marriage, and that would have been fine, except I have a problem where sometimes when I think that I am right about something, it can be a real source of tension between me and the person I'm arguing with. And the reason it's a source of tension is that I'm right. And so I remember distinctly talking to my friend Dana, and she goes, well, you don't believe in marriage for you, but you, of course you believe in it for other people. And I was like, no, I think it's insane, you know, for anyone. And she said, why? And I said, well, first of all, it just seems doomed. You know, 50% of marriages end in divorce. That's just first marriages, by the way. Second marriages, 60 to 62% end in divorce. Third marriages, 70 to 75% end in divorce. That's a learning curve. Second of all, monogamy is impossible, or at very least, not a sure thing. When I say that, I think people assume that I'm implying that men are incapable of being faithful. But I think women are just as incapable, but for more sophisticated reasons, you know? I mean, with men, we're just really simple, very simple sexuality. When I say that, my female friends are like, well, we like sex just as much as you do. And I say, sure, but it's different. And they say, how? And I say, have you ever masturbated while driving a car? Number three, I'm never gonna be happy. Why would anyone wanna be a part of that? I think that's not brought up often enough. I didn't know that would be the reaction. Oh, no, that's the hopeful part. I had one ally in all this, which is my friend Andy, and he's a comedian as well. Not only did we decide we weren't gonna get married, we actually tried to stop other people we knew from getting married. Yeah, we were pretty good at it. Like, we stopped or put on hold 3 or 4 marriages, you know? We were pretty good. I mean, we weren't like the best in the world. I'm sure they're better in Europe, but we were We were solid, you know? Like, so, like, for example, at one point, my friend Alex was about to get engaged, and so we just took him to dinner, and during dessert, we gave him a long, hard stare, and we said, "Are you sure this is what you want to do?" And then we went cold to give him the sense of what it would feel like when we weren't friends anymore. So February 27th, 2007, I'm at Andy's house in Los Angeles. And earlier in the night, I got in an argument with my girlfriend on the phone. It was a bad one because I knew that I was right. And Andy was the perfect person to be with in this kind of a situation because he's the kind of friend who just takes your side regardless of whether you're right. He says stuff like, "She sounds crazy." Like, even if what she's saying isn't that crazy, like, he'd be like, "She only eats whole wheat bagels." He'd be like, "She sounds crazy." You'd be like, "That's not even the crazy part." You know, that. Telling him about this argument, and he goes, "You're right." I go, "I know, I'm right." He goes, "Yeah, you're right." I go, "I know, I'm right. I gotta tell her about this in the morning." And I get in my rental car to head back to my hotel, and I'm driving out of Andy's small road, and I'm T-boned. I don't know if you're familiar with this term. This is the culinary way of describing when you are hit by another car, driver's side, at a 90-degree angle, like a T-bone steak. And in 1.5 seconds, I'm spun around. I think I'm dead. No way, I'm paralyzed. And then I hear nothing. And then I hear the other car skid out and drive away. I know. Let me tell you how this argument started. I met Jenny in St. Louis. My friend Andy and I were working for her company. They were performing for a bunch of wrestling coaches, which is really my demographic. No, I was very nervous about this. I was actually kind of about to go on stage, and I was like scrawling notes on my napkin. A lot of times I'll write kind of manic notes on napkins or hotel stationery, and Jenny looked at me and she goes, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm writing my set list." And then she goes, "I think it'll be fine." And I was like, "No, it won't be fine." And she was like, "I think it'll be okay." And I said, "Why do you think that?" And she said, "Well, you look so nervous. I think they'll feel sorry for you." But Jenny has this really soft, sweet voice, like the kind of voice where you kind of get away with saying anything. At one point she said, "It seems like you comedians are a lot funnier on stage." Normally I'd be offended by that, but in this instance, I was like, "You are right. That is a great point. You are beautiful." You know, she really was. And from the moment I met Jenny, I knew I wanted to sleep with her at least once. Stay with me. I mean that, like, in the most meaningful way. Like, that was the most that I was capable of in my life at that point. I just come off a really long, difficult breakup with my college sweetheart where we were gonna get married, and then we weren't. And then when we weren't, I was so heartbroken, I just kind of swore off the idea of marriage or even living with someone entirely, you know? But from the moment I met Jenny, I just wanted to be with her, and I didn't think it was gonna happen. Like, I don't have that kind of confidence. I actually think of myself as a sex maybe, which is to say that if I'm seeing a girl, she'd think I'd have sex with him, maybe, you know? And I'm not ashamed of that. There were periods in my life where I was a sex never. Or a sex with self, always. And often, surprisingly often. Yeah, I just don't give off a great first impression. Like, I'll give you an example. Like, this is the shirt I decided to wear tonight. Like, I didn't spill mustard on the real shirt, and this is the backup shirt. I mean, this is my A outfit. My B outfit was naked. I like to dress down to perpetuate the myth that I might be a fixer-upper. I've reached this point in my life, I don't really look in the mirror before I leave my apartment. I glance at it to make sure I'm not bleeding. You know what I mean? They're like, but I don't stare at the mirror. If I stare at the mirror, I get angry. Like, I feel like I'm complaining about a bad call a ref just made. I'm like, come on! going if you're leaving the house like that? And the ref is God, and the competing teams are my gut and my receding hairline. And it's a close game, because my gut is large, and my hairline is fast, and I'm all riled up. I'm about to charge the field, and the guy comes by with fried dough. And I'm like, next jar! And next time I go with the fried dough, because I have a problem.